Blog Talk
right.
Radio.
It's the Late Show with Brassy Weatherman.
Yeah. One, two, three, four.
Up this morning, looking for my shoes. Look behind the trunk, found the hesitation blues. Lordy, tell me how long.
Lordy, tell me how long.
Will I have to wait?
Will I have to wait?
Can I get you now?
Can I get you now?
Must I hesitate? Take me rock away from here. Lordy, tell me how long.
Lordy, tell me how long.
Will I have to wait?
Will I have to wait?
Can I get you now?
Can I get you now?
Must I hesitate?
That was a tongue tie. Not that I forgot your name. I got tongue tied. A great new book out called City of Madness. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about some of his past adventures in writing. And of course, we are joined by Mr. William Brower.
Howdy, howdy.
Howdy, howdy. And Mr. Tom
Hello.
Sawyer.
Hey, and I'm Aunt Polly unapproved. So hey, you know.
Did you say your Polly's got a poop?
Yeah. Well, whatever. You know.
It's something or other.
Yeah.
And, of course, the guy who sponsors our show, the one-man band, the owner and CEO of Black Bedsheet Books, Mr. Nicholas Grabowski.
That must be me.
I think so.
Hope so.
Better be. I didn't know we were doing introductions yet.
I'm just going with it.
Well, hello, everybody.
Double check the name tag
for the show.
All right, we got a couple of announcements tonight. Of course, tonight we do have Jason Wolfgang Gaylord. Awesome.
Hello.
Woo!
All right.
Yeah.
Hello.
Jason.
Hello.
Come in.
Hi, excellent. Nice to meet you. Thanks for coming.
And
yeah, Wednesday.
Huh?
What? What?
Never mind.
We didn't lose him, did you?
No, he's still here. All right, and then
okay.
On the 22nd, we got Mark Allen Pilgrim. Mark Allen's going to be here. Great actor from overseas. 26. You guys ready for this one?
No.
John Mayberry will be live. New York Times best-selling author, 5-time Bram Stoker Award. Not that any other
cool.
writer on here should feel less than perfect. But John Mayberry will be joining us on the 26th. It is confirmed. All right. And then
oh, nice.
On the
that's nice.
One
yeah,
week
that,
from tonight.
That is
yep.
1 week
we hit-
from tonight. So, of course, you know, we will be taking callers. So if anybody wants to call in and ask him a question, we always take callers. If anybody ever wants to call in and ask a question, we're here for you. All right, and then it
and
looks
like
on the
callers
29th.
Back, too.
Huh?
But then we also put the callers back, too.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right, and then on the 29th, I believe that we are still going to have Rob Yeager on. And a couple of announcements. We got to make them in October. We got to finalize dates, what they are going to be on. David Lee Madison will be back on in October. I'm hoping for the 6th of October. And let's see here. I didn't tell you about this yet, Tom.
What?
Chuck Chapman came on his word. He will call Butch Patrick.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so me and Butch Patrick, we've been messaging each other. We're trying to set up a date. He definitely says he wants to come on October. He's going to notify us of schedules and everything else, and we are still booking. Oh, and William, something else. You recommended this gentleman. Hold on. Let me find his name. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on.
No problem.
Hold on. I'm scrolling down. My mouse is acting up. Hold on. Almost there. Charles Pellegrino.
Charles Pellegrino? Yes.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. We've been messaging each other a little bit, and, you know, he told me to call him next week, talk to him next week, and we will talk about the show. All right. Without
excellent.
Any further ado, Nick, any big announcements for Black Veggie Books?
We've got a lot of books coming out before the end of the month, and we've got a couple of weeks here. Actually, fall starts this Wednesday officially, so
woo-hoo!
I feel good about that. Still, it's still summer. But we're coming out with books by Raina Young and Fred Weehy and Chuck W. Chapman and Carson Buckingham. And we just came out with a really cool Raina Young Monsters book. And speaking of which, too, about tonight's guest, we just came out with his book that he's going to talk about, City of Madness. And that would be Jason Wolfgang Amadeus Gaylor. And
I can't take credit for that name. I stole it from my father, so Wolfgang is his. I'm just using it for, you know, literary purposes.
Hey, it still
well,
works,
it's a good
though.
Name. It's a good name though. I mean Wolfgang
it's a good,
is
it's a good
not...
solid name, yeah.
Yeah, and Amadeus didn't, like, copyright it or anything. There's a lot
nope.
of great people with that name, too. But, yeah, so a lot of stuff, and we just came out with about 100 different titles the other week of, journals and things and stuff. You know, I've been, like, privy the last few months or so to these things. I watch YouTube. And there's and you can't avoid it being a publisher too, of all these like get rich quick kind of schemes on KDP, on Amazon, on Kindle, with oh yeah, you can make $36,000 a month off of notebooks and journals and planners and coloring books and things. But I heard it so much, and I'm so used to KDP and everything that I thought that I'd spend a week and kind of give it a try. And so I made an announcement on our Black Bed Sheet Books group page about it. But they're all under the author of Hamsterfish. They're all available now on Amazon for around about $6. And I've already made a few sales off of it. So it's kind of a side experiment. I mean, I figured I already knew how to do it. I'll do it, see if it works for me, if these people can make some money off of it, like they say, then that would be like a little side thing. But I got that out of my system, and they're available now. So that's a little side thing. As a matter of fact, if you buy the books, on the back of each one, it says Spider Plant Agenda, which is kind of what I'm calling this kind of thing. Spider plants, you know, they kind of extend and go into different other places. You could cut off their branches and replant them someplace else, and then they'll grow there. So, you know, it's a kind of a metaphor kind of a thing. But anyway, it's an experiment. So, but look for them on Amazon under Hamsterfish. A lot of them are really kind of unique, have unique, like, cool covers, but mostly designed for, like, school, for teenagers, college students and stuff and whatever to, like, write in and whatever. But I'm back to publishing real books, which is the big point. And actually, the more I look at it, the more I go, well, you know what? These people that are saying, that are encouraging other people to do the exact same thing, they're going to oversaturate the market, and Amazon's probably going to step up and do something about it. Because there's a lot of them, it turns out. And I keep thinking, you know what? These people don't have what I have, legitimate, real authors. So, you know, anywho.
Well, where are
they? Coming out. That's what's came out. And I'm also kind of, even as this show goes on, I'm going to have my phone with me and talk a little bit too, but I'm putting up more Christmas stuff, getting ready for a big Christmas hoopla extravaganza, and hopefully we'll reach 1,000 trick-or-treaters this year. So that's going to be – oh, and Fred Weehee is going to be here in person signing books for free. And so am I. And whatever author wants to join us, we've got room. If you want to travel, you've got a place to stay, and you've got – I'm going to provide the books to sign. And you got candy and stuff too. Anyway, I remember when Fred was here, and that was going on the last time he was here. Raina Young was also here too, signing books. He tweeted or said something on Facebook that he could find books fast enough. So anyway, and that's what we have to look forward to.
Cool.
Yeah, everybody had a good time that year. That was a fun Halloween.
Yeah, that was awesome.
A lot of great stuff. All right, let's get on with our show. Jason!
Yes.
How you doing?
Welcome. Good. Welcome
back,
Francine.
How are we doing
tonight? We're doing well. How are you?
Good.
Another night in paradise here in South Florida.
Yeah, so it's nighttime out here in New York. So I'm jealous you still have 3 hours on me. So
no, actually I got 3 hours on you.
Yeah, you do.
It's nighttime over there in Florida. It's Florida. Pronounce it correctly. Okay. Anyways, City of Madness. Tell us about it.
It's my latest release. It was extremely personal and one of one of the challenges that I encountered, because I had some health issues last year with some TIA strokes and whatnot. So I decided to...
I didn't know that.
It was in public knowledge, but you know, I guess it is now.
Wow.
Yeah.
My next collection, I wanted to exercise my brain a little bit, so I decided maybe to do some flash fiction. And so that's what City of Madness is. It actually wasn't really expected to be released anytime soon, but I kind of wrapped it up a little bit and pitched it to Nick, and Bailey Hunter did the great cover, which is it's a huge skull on the cover with a bunch of little skulls on the top, like a mohawk, and the background is set against the city, so that's why I decided to call it City of Madness, where all my characters live and breathe. And there are recurring characters in here, such as Jeremiah Black, which Nick put out many years ago, and just other standalone stories, and some poems. Some of it talks about my strokes and stuff like that. Others are just cool stories, like, a demented guy who does unique jack-o'-lanterns, and Jeremiah's returning a couple pieces, and so it's really fun to write and put together, and it is the beginning of my comeback, I hope, because I do have other releases coming out that I'm prepared to announce tonight. I have permission from my other publishers and whatnot, so I do have those as well. One of them is I have a short story that recently got accepted to D&T Publishing for their Dire Circle anthology, which comes out next month.
Cool. Congratulations.
Which is based on the darker side of the zodiac symbols. So I picked Leo, which is my zodiac symbol, and it's the War Maiden, which is a huge lion that wants to do, is conflicted between war and peace, but you know, if you do war, then you can rebuild and whatnot. So I kind of spun a neat horror story about that that got accepted. So I'm excited for that. And my other release, I just talked to Terror Track Publishing, and I have a short story collection also based on some personal experiences. It's called Rift. And it's kind of a companion piece to Sacrificial Sons, which is my latest novel before City of Madness with Nick. So it kind of ties up kind of loose ends in that from that book. And that's set to release on November 1st through Terror Track Publishing. So I'm excited about that as well. So I have a bunch of exciting projects, and I still have other projects with Nick down the pike. I know he's probably looking to re-release my ghost prints as well. We were talking about that, so I'm hoping I'm not, jumping the gun on that one. And another story.
Oh no, yeah, I'm hoping ghost prints can come out by in time for Christmas. In time for Christmas. Yeah, it's going to be a new edition of it.
New edition, ready to go, rock and roll. And the other exciting news I have would be I had a story from a collection of mine. I can't remember which one. It was done through Nick, either Filter or Cinema, short story collections, and one of them was called Gravedigger. And I've been working with Pulse Pounding Productions and Paul McFall, who is the producer. And he actually wrote the screenplay for it, so kind of shopping that around as well. So that's, like, in development. So hopefully that becomes something one day once COVID settles down. And he's working on other projects to open up doors to hopefully allow that to go through. So that's pretty exciting as well. So
wow. So you've been really busy, in other words.
Yeah, under the cover of darkness. Yeah, I mean, as I'm trying to get back on my feet, health-wise, and, you know, do all that stuff. But writing really helped me out through all that. So, you know, City of Madness is really a personal project of mine. So, as is Rift. So I'm excited to have that come out, too. So,
Wow. That's great, though.
Yeah, and like all my work all lives in the same universe and world. So that's, like I said, Jeremiah pops up in Rift a lot too. So and other characters throughout my novels. So so
that's
hopefully
awesome.
That end of 2021 and 2022 hopefully will be prosperous years.
I think everybody's hoping. Please just stop this. Stop the madness.
Yes. Stop it.
Sounds like
Tom,
you've been busy, Jason.
Fucking, yeah, busy. I don't know where with like four jobs, but I find it. So,
wow.
But I was talking with Tom Sawyer. I don't know if he's on tonight. Is he on tonight?
I'm on.
Yeah, he's on.
I'm here.
Yeah. I know. I'm just messing with you. He was saying that we should lock Nick in a closet until he agrees to do Read Us or Die again. So you know, another sequel of all the fabulous authors from Black Bedsheet Books put into another anthology. So you know, hopefully we can work on that next year too. So
That'd be nice.
Yeah, I've been seriously thinking about it. I believe it's going to happen. Yeah, it's been a long time since the first one. And I know you, Tom, you always, like, have two or three copies at least at your table at the conventions whenever you order books. Oh yeah, I forgot. Yeah, I'm going to get to your new order. I caught it on Messenger. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, you always order a few copies of Read Us or Die and stuff. And Jason, you edited the first one too, so actually
yeah,
you guys
I'll
had
be...
more in common than that, not just being Black Bedsheet book authors, but I think the both of you, I have more books than any other authors. Tom, I've got like at least like I don't know 10 or 9 or 10, and Jason too. And Jason was one of my original authors too. The first year that I set out with Black Bedsheet Books, his book was Demon Revolver. And so that was like the first year. So you guys have been around for a long time hereabouts.
Yeah, we're like spider plants. We just grow everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, Nick, it's an honor
and
privilege to be one of your authors,
you
man.
People.
What?
You have your people talk to my people, and like I could do Readers or Die again.
Oh yeah, that would be groovy.
Now
that you have all new
maybe
offers.
For New Year's.
Maybe there's a lot on my plate through the rest of the year, so it might be something for next year. But early next year, maybe even as soon as March of next year.
Yeah, that's
probably
more
towards the end of
feasible.
Winter, January, February, something like that. We'll see. But that sounds groovy. We're also probably going to do another anthology on top of that, another woman's anthology, to like a sequel to Scream in the Night. So we're working on that too. So that's going to be great. And Read Us or Die, yeah. It's about time. We got a lot of new authors over the years, too, and recently. So a lot of fresh, fresh meat. Yeah.
Fresh meat to put through the grinder.
Oh, yeah. And so, congratulations. Welcome to the family. Start writing.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
Well, that's our job as writers, man. We got to
keep writing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
don't stop. That's why I tell everybody. All right, just
everybody
one. Go ahead.
Everybody here are writers, so everybody can answer this question if they believe they want to. Do any of you believe in writer's block?
Yes.
No.
Yeah, I've had it. I've had it once. So it does happen.
But for me,
it happened with just one story. It didn't happen like as a whole, you know, collective thing. Just like one story. My shark sequel I was working on, I just kind of hit a wall. I haven't gone back to it. And then just life events, I just didn't get back to writing for a long time until probably 2019. But yeah, it does exist.
What do you guys think caused it? You just think it's maybe stress dealing with everyday life?
Well, for me, I write like you're watching a movie, so. All my books, those that have read my work know, you know, the action and the dialogue and everything. So when I write a scene, I have to do it in my head like a director from all different angles. So if it doesn't sit well with me, then I don't write it. And then sometimes it takes a really long time for me to get it just right. So sometimes that kind of stumbles me. And that happened with my shark sequel. So I'm still trying to figure that out. The best possible route to end it.
My belief is about writing is it's like a relationship or a fart. If you force it, it's shit. So I mean, sometimes you just gotta seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it sounds cliche, but it's you know. Sometimes when I'm having a drought, I gotta get an adult beverage or two in me to relax. Because I think it's mostly stress related. If you try to overthink it, or if you just press,
right, yeah,
gonna just sit back and kind of get yourself relaxed enough to. I mean, it's a lonely endeavor, anyways. But you got to relax a little bit. So maybe, or do another activity or something like that. Take your mind off it, then come back to it somehow.
Yeah,
you know.
If I'm not there mentally, I can't start writing.
Yeah,
because then it's just. Then it's just,
you know, I think maybe that's our body telling us that it's time to take a break or don't press it. Just find something else to do, have a drink or two, relax. I mean, I'm not trying to endorse alcoholism or something here, like Hemingway or something, but, just kind of find that group that just kind of,
Sometimes I might actually do research.
Yeah.
Does writing energize or exhaust any of you? Does it energize or exhaust you at times? Which one would you say it does more, energize or exhaust you?
I think it energizes me.
Yeah, it energizes me too. I mean, like if I can't focus on something to write, then I'll do research on an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just researched a fish parasite to write into a flash fiction story. But I didn't know how the story was going to go quite yet. But I did the research on it, and then it finally came together. So. Because I'm like, what fish parasite can I put into a human type of thing? And I found one, so.
Well, yeah, you're
nasty.
Both of you are lucky on that part. I'm actually the opposite, because what I generally do is I lock myself in the writing room, so I just have the pot of coffee, the computer, and a playlist, and then I'll just write all the way up until the point of exhaustion. And then 9 times out of 10, I'll sleep on the keyboard. So that gives me another 200 pages of jibber jabber that I got to clear out when I wake up in the morning.
Well, I guess I'm old school because I write mine out on a legal pad and then type it in, because then I can move paragraphs and draw arrows and write stuff on the side of the legal pad. And I'm old school that way, so. But I could do it watching movies or TV shows. So, I need some visual stimulation, I think. How do you do it, Jason?
Yeah. My ideas come from anywhere. I mean, the slightest seed could just sprout into a story, you know? Like,
I hear that.
Like the latest movie, the latest Halloween one that came out like 2 years ago where he carves the human heads as jack-o'-lanterns, that made me want to write one of the stories in City of Madness called Lanterns about this creepy guy and, you know, and what he does in his spare time. So, you know, they never know where your idea is going to come from and where it's going to go. And the Flash Fiction is unique because I have to cram, like, a whole story into, like, 1,000 words and make it resonate with the readers. And a couple of the beta readers I've had have really liked the stories, the Flash Fiction stories. So that's always great feedback and a good thing because that means I'm making an impact in a short amount of time. And that's a success in my eyes.
I have a lot of respect for that because I don't think I can do that in 1,000 words or less.
I didn't think I could do it either. That's why I was doing it as like a brain experiment to exercise my brain, given, you know, what all my stuff I was going through. But I mean, yeah, there's stories in here where I'm racing the devil against the, you know, around a racetrack, and you know, he's got a nice fast car, I got a beat up car type of thing, but I got a lot of character and grit type of thing. So it's simple 800 word piece, but you get the entire message and the visuals and everything. You know, so
yeah. I mean, I was just gonna say, just remember one thing, Tom. I mean, anything's possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
The trick with doing the Flash Fiction a lot of times is just more in the sense of you know, maybe trying to consolidate the story. You know, shorten, if you're going to do an outline on it, shorten it down to like one or two sections.
Oh. Right. Yeah. I've always wanted to do it. I just never gave it a try because I didn't think I got to think of something that could be that small.
It could be anything. I mean, I wrote a story about a guy who you know, there's three women who he wrongs, and they just slap a meat hook into him, drag him out of the trunk, drag him in the forest, and, you know, enact revenge on him. And, you know,
nice.
So it could be
meat
anything.
Hooks are good.
Meat hooks are always, they're underused and underappreciated.
But they look so awesome on film. I mean, come on, think about it. When somebody gets killed with a meat hook, it's not just a little meat hook stabbing. Like, you're either placed on the meat hook or it's going through your body, and it's very graphic the way they do it. The meat hook, I agree, definitely underrated. But when this shows up on screen, man.
Oh, but
and that's
the
thing, you know.
For something like that, I could actually just picture it because it would be tonight on Lifetime, three women wronged make a right. The meat hook.
You know who is the most famous pop culture icon that actually kills people with a meat hook, don't you? Who that is?
Let's see.
It would be Candyman.
Captain Hook.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, Candyman has a meat hook. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
see. But
don't say his name two or three times, though.
I think together we already did.
Yeah, we might have.
But we're not looking in here.
That's true.
What's your next question, Francie?
This is going to be a tough one, and if any of you guys want to, you know, talk about this also, because I think this is a very important question. When do you think, okay, when somebody first gets published, do they call themselves a writer at that point? Or when do you think the starting point is that somebody can actually say that they are a writer?
I think when they're first published, to be fair, they put in the work, so why not? you know, you wrote it. It's, that's just my opinion. If you wrote it, then you are the writer of it. So, you know, I mean, are you famous or anything? No, I'm not famous, but I mean, I am a writer, you know.
I mean,
that's a good question. I think you're equating that whether it's fame or not, I think.
Yeah. You know, I mean,
well, no, I'm talking about, like, let's say, so you wrote a book, but your emotions aren't in it. It's just like, okay, I'm going to write a book. You know, I'll just write a book.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of writers that are,
yeah,
you know, will put it out without emotion. So that may not really help too much. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think if you actually sit there and you write it and you finish it, even if it's not published, then you're technically a writer. Because look at how many people have often said at book signings and things like that, I wish I could do what you're doing. Or I wish I could start writing a book, you know. And it's just, it's the level of commitment more than anything else.
Yeah, I agree. I've been a writer my whole life, honestly. So I've always considered myself a writer, but I consider getting to the next level, being published, kind of like, you know, the holy grail for me, like to substantiate all those, you know, years of writing and trying to make it happen, and then you become published. So I think if you're a writer for your whole entire life, you're a writer. You just, if you're published, it just brings more attention to your skills and your craft, because that means someone actually, you know, validates you as a writer. You know,
yep.
Unless you know. I mean, I did the self-publishing route first, and then I found Nick, you know, and then that kind of validated my writing. I mean, I had another publisher too, Stone Garden, in the very beginning, that did my werewolf trilogy. And then I think as you grow and you connect with other authors like I have and you share in the community, that kind of further validates you as a writer, because then people are reading your work and they're giving you feedback, good or bad, and then they're like, oh, when's your next, you know, project coming out? We can't wait. And that just kind of energizes you. Again, back to Francie's, does it exhaust or energize you? It absolutely energizes you, because you have a fan base, no matter how big, that wants to read more of your work. So,
what werewolf trilogy was that?
That was the Quiver trilogy.
Yes, the Quiver trilogy. It's funny because the other day I was dusting some of my bookshelves and stuff, and I came across some of the stuff that you gave me back in the day. Like the Quiver, it was all three in one volume.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to find new home for that, because that, you know, publisher unfortunately went, you know, he decided to go and do other things. So I got to find a new home for that, because that is my kind of like my pride and joy. Yeah, that's the first one. That's watching American Werewolf in London at like 6 and being scared and always want to write a werewolf novel. So, you know.
Yeah, and back in those days, too, you also did Europa.
Europa, yep. That publisher went under, too, but, you know, that's still out there, and Contagion is still floating around out there. And but then I think the rest are all with you. I have, I think pretty much the rest are with you. So.
Yeah, it's quite a lot of material. You've been really prolific the last 10 years, not unlike Tom, too, but but way back, even when I published Demon Revolver, you had that stuff, and that's a lot. Quiver is all three of them combined. That's a big book. I was thinking when I came across it again after all this time.
Yeah, you could
you
could use that to hold up your bookcase or your coffee table. It's pretty thick.
I do. No, I'm kidding.
No, it's great. It's great. So, give the cat something to read. Then I have the Red Triangle with James Ward Kirk and his publishing house. So, and that's actually one of the
big fan favorites. So that was one of my favorites to write as well. So
what was that about?
That's the shark book, the three sharks that terrorized San Francisco. And
That
was a good book.
I like that.
Yeah.
Nice.
Enjoy it. And I was working on the sequel to that, and like I said, I just kind of hit a wall like 65,000 words in, and at one point I'll get back to it, but I have the ending, I just don't have like the middle connecting piece, and that's what's frustrating.
That wasn't writer's block by chance, huh?
No, it was. It absolutely was.
It does,
it's the middle portion of any, of writing anyways is always a fun challenge because, you know, God forbid you might come up with a really great idea and everything else, but then when you go and you execute it, and then you realize that it just kind of threw a wrench into the wheel between the way what you put up in the opening and then also how it ends.
And the reason it was taking so long is because it takes place in South Africa, and I did a lot of research down there, you know, for the restaurants and police and the flavor of everything. So that's what was kind of slowing it down to a little bit. So I want to make sure everything fit. So, but one day.
Well, if you're up for a suggestion, especially if you're going to do research like that, contact there's a particular region or something along those lines. Contact the local minister of tourism.
Well, that's a great idea. I had something even better though. I had an author friend who actually lived in the area, so I was getting some nice firsthand knowledge and stuff. But like I said, it just the middle connector piece is just it's almost there, but it has to be perfect in my head before I even write it, because then it's just a waste of time to write it, because you're gonna go back and fix it how many times anyway. So
Hey, Jason. Hey, Jason. There's a segment in your book, your collection Filter, that I published that kind of sets you apart from a lot of other authors they actually see like several pages of you in comic strip form. About that for a second.
Oh yes, that was a fun little trip. Had a friend of mine, Scott, that did it. He did the comic book strip, and it was based on a piece called The Conversation, and it's about me and I'm on the bridge and having conversation on the phone, and it's in comic book form. Yeah, it's a nice strip comic, and basically I'm just talking to an imaginary voice, and it's no one's on the other end of the phone, so it's one of those.
Oh wow!
but you think I'm talking to somebody, and I'm on the bridge, you know, there's traffic and whatnot, telling me to do stuff, and I'm like, no, you know, XYZ, and yeah, then at the end, I believe I get shot by the cops on the bridge or something, and the phone, they pick up the phone,
yeah,
like, this phone is dead, there's no one on the other end, the battery's dead, it's, like, not working, so that was kind of a cool twist to the story.
I was going to say, wow,
and,
what a tweet.
Yeah, what a tweet. Scott, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but it's T-W-E-L-L-S, I believe. So, 12, maybe. If I'm mispronouncing it, I'm sorry. But he did a great job. So.
Yeah, the book is Filter. I actually think that Filter and Cinema are probably the best books that I've published by you. Thinking though, because Jeremiah Black as a novel is great, but I think those are your best collections. I really like your new one, City of Madness. But hey, if anybody's gonna hasn't read Jason, I think a great introduction, like a wow introduction, would be either Filter or Cinema.
And a side note to Filter is my daughter Natalie did the cover of Filter, which is a dream catcher. And the idea is, you know, they're supposed to let the nightmares out, but what happens if they let the nightmares in? So,
nice.
That was, and my sister-in-law, Mary Ellen Doring, did a bunch of artwork in there too for Filter and for
there's
Cinema
illustrations
too, I think. So
would there be any possibility of seeing a an adaptation of, you know, Jeremiah Black into a graphic novel form?
That'd be cool. I would like that if you had any connections you wanted to pair up with, because I've been searching for graphic novel stuff for my work, but you know, between the jobs and personal life and the family, it's kind of hard to gain traction on that kind of stuff. But I'm always open to it. So I always thought Contagion, my pseudo zombie novel, would make a great graphic novel, where the colonists are, you know, affected by Ebola and leprosy, so they're, you know, zombie-like entities running amok in a colony. So,
you know, come to think of it, I have a really good friend back home who's a really good artist. In fact, I think he's taking his artistry, you know, further. And he loves drawing comics and everything. Nick, maybe I should get in contact with him.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Well, maybe you should. What's stopping you?
You guys were talking about it. I was like, oh my gosh, I have a really good friend back home that is a great comic book. He draws comics.
You guys probably know this, but I did have a really solid connection with graphic artists and with Shot in the Dark Comics back in the day. It was so exciting, and they were actually coming through with their commitments to me about stories in Red Wet Dirt. And Looks Like a Rat to me, I still have a stack of copies. I sell them on eBay here and there sometimes, I did have a conversation with Gene. I forgot his name.
Gene Tipton.
Tipton. About how the other stuff, like the Yuletide thing, which is a big story in Red Wet Dirt, it's already been penciled, and I have the copies on a file. He was saying that they were all signed over to him, and he gives them all to me so I could do whatever I want with them. But I keep thinking, what about the guy that's penciled? Do I owe him any money if I like put it? But anyway, that was something when I started Black Bedsheet Books, I told myself, okay, I've got my career with my writing. I did my stuff and people know me to an extent and blah, blah, blah. And that's, you know, a stepping stone. And then I could use that to the people that I take on with Black Bedsheet, we could all, like, go up the ladder together and this was an example, and it was really exciting back in the day when I latched on with them. And they were doing other comics, superhero comics and other stuff, and they were going really, really good. And then, like I found out later, happens to a lot of them. Something happens, they don't get the funding, that not enough people buy, and they just go under. and everything just collapses. And so, you know, I don't know the reasons why. Gene has always been up and up with me. He's always been great. And everybody involved with Shot in the Dark Comics has always been great. And like I said, they did come through for me those couple of times. But, man, you know, both you, Tom, and Jason, you were getting – because I was telling them, okay, we got these books and these ideas from these other authors and stuff, and he was really into it. So I thought, yeah, that's exactly what I've been wanting to do. But it just never happened because of it. Just never did. But it's just a matter of attracting people to you and then going out and looking for people. And so right now, there are a group of, I haven't said this before, Franzi doesn't even know, but there is...
Big reveal.
I really
yeah,
want to keep it to this country, but there's these artists that they're great artists, comic book artists, and they're out of Chile. They were, I talked to them about doing, about finishing the Yuletide thing. But then, because of things that happened with me and, you know, my family and stuff, I kind of lost track, and I couldn't afford it. But I do have some ties that I have to, like, get back into and see what they are more about so that I can get this started again. So maybe we have some, I don't know what, but it's probably going to be from another country.
I could talk to my friend back home and see what he thinks about it, too, if you guys want.
Same with a graphic novel in the vein of, like, what the old creepy and eerie magazines were by Warren Publishing, where you have different authors with different short stories in them to showcase their stories with the artist's talents.
Oh, man, I've got at least three or four in my collection still.
You guys were talking about Read Us or Die. Right?
Yeah.
Read Us or Die. I've been, and there's a possibility that we could do a Read Us or Die graphic novel version if things were to work out with me and the guys in Chile or wherever, too. There's other possibilities that I have to further look into that are very interested. It just depends on how much and what, you know, all that. But we also have foreign translation things that I've been working very hard at, and audiobooks that I've been working very hard at. I sound like Donald Trump because I'm talking that way.
No,
I've been working very hard at. We're doing something that we're working with. But anyway, yeah. So it's just a question of, like, the audiobook guy, he has only gotten in touch with me twice this year. He's been going through some family problems. And I signed several contracts with him, including some of my books, The Price of Fear, and Patrick James Ryan's book. The Night It Got Out, and some other stuff, and just like the comic books, it's like if that goes very well, and he produces these things for me, then on to the next, and on to the next, on to Jason, on to Tom, and you know, and just then that they haven't produced a single thing, came close with The Price of Fear, but the guy that was supposed to narrate it, he dropped out. For I don't know why. So as a publisher, as somebody that's not just in charge of his own books but other people's and trying to orchestrate things like I do, I realize sometimes, you know, I fall short. I go through family problems, things slow down and stuff. It happens to so many other people. It's like it's hard to get a grasp because like Shot in the Dark. For example, I don't think that's necessarily their fault. They came into hard times and things collapsed. And things like that with the audiobook guy and stuff. It's just, you know, but you got to keep trying. Got to climb that mountain. But, yeah, but those are things that are possibilities that are still in the works, too, and foreign translations as well. So I keep trying. When I find good, when I find something worth shouting about, I'll let you guys know, but I keep trying.
Well, I mean,
because as it goes too, I mean, you guys get royalties. Sometimes they're okay. Sometimes they're just not. And it's just really a question as a publisher. It's really a question of what more can I do with these books than just publish them and put them out? You know, foreign translations, graphic novels, other things. So, you know.
Yeah, that'd be smart on marketing wise and, you know, company wise,
well,
not just for you, but for all of us.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's a win-win all the way around. Or it can be.
Yeah, it is.
Well, Dick, I might be able to help alleviate part of the weight on your shoulders then. I happen to be very good friends with a government-licensed translator in Barcelona, Spain. So if you need books translated to Spanish, let me know. I'll put you in touch.
Okay. Okay, that would be good. Groovy ghoulies. I didn't want to steer the course. I want to keep the spotlight on Jason there. And one question that's been in the back of my mind is, since I've been publishing you for so long, and I know the big bulk of your work, it seems to me like your favorite character you like to write about is Jeremiah Black.
Yes.
If that's true, why is that? And it's Jeremiah Black is, his world is like a period piece. It goes back a couple of hundred years at least. So talk about why that is and who Jeremiah Black is.
Jeremiah Black was in the novel Jeremiah Black, his own self-titled one. He was a family man, upstanding citizen, and the story goes, one night there was he was walking with his family down the streets of London, and there was a, lack of a better word, a hitman, I guess, or, some grimy criminal, who was sent by the devil to kill Jeremiah's family, but Jeremiah intercedes, kills the guy, and he has to swap out with the guy now, so now he is the devil's hitman. And he struggles with that for a while. Think of it like Two-Face from Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, so the devil gives him a sheet of paper, and on that sheet of paper is one name, and that's who the contract is for. So Jeremiah tells him, as long as my family stays safe, I'll do this. And he's like, yeah, sure, for now, until their names come up on the piece of paper. And so the story of Jeremiah is he takes place in late 1800s London, when Jack the Ripper is just gone missing. And since he's immortal now, because he's dead and in hell, and he travels through time, so he's hunting down whoever he has to hunt down. One of it's his son on the Titanic, and then he gets brought to 1996 Ellis Island. And the whole time he's got an inspector on his trail, Jackson Granger from the late 1800s, who after a fight with Jeremiah, he becomes immortal because their blood mixes. So it's kind of this cat and mouse through time, I guess, like a la Time Machine-esque. Eventually Jeremiah catches up to Jeremiah, and he goes back to hell after he gets defeated from his big stand at the end of the book. But he was such an interesting character, and so he pops up. He's my main antagonist. I guess he's my darker half, if you would, in a way. So he pops up everywhere in all my short stories, and it's always a continual thing. So whatever happened in Jeremiah Black, if he got a injury or a scar or lost a finger or whatever, that's the way he's presented now, here on out. So there's a story where he joins the ferrymen, who are a bunch of cops, other characters from a novella of mine, who one of the cops can talk to spirits, so they bring criminal spirits to justice. So they team with Jeremiah to bring down another supernatural entity, and Then I wrote a book called Dying Light for James Ward Kirk Publishing as a kind of like a 10-year celebration of being published. And I did it from my perspective. So Malcolm Ellis, which is me, in the initials M-E. Jeremiah wants to kill the author, which is me, so he can have free reign of the whole literary world that I've created without any interference from me. So, so he tries that, and he kills me, or he thinks he does, and then he resurrects a bunch of bad guys from my novels. I go back to The Cabin in Quiver, my first book, to heal with a bunch of the heroes type of thing. And then he and I have this big epic fight on the lake, recreating the Quiver ending, minus the werewolf and the sheriff, just me and him. So that was cool. And then I got to thinking, what about his beginnings? Like, you know, so then Sacrificial Sons was born, which is also a novel with Nick. And I go back further to like the 1850s in Ocracoke, North Carolina, and a little colony there run by the devil, and he's taking all the firstborn sons, and Jeremiah's parents are part of that colony, and he has yet to be born. So the devil is trying to get his hands on Jeremiah as an infant, but it doesn't work out, and then their fates intertwine later on in Jeremiah Black. So that was a fun novel to write. And then he just keeps popping up everywhere because he's just a great foil, you know, he's a great enemy to my hero or what have you. I kind of pattern it after any of you watched the original MacGyver series, like MacGyver and
Murdoch, yeah.
kind of that, you know, you think he's dead, he comes back, you think he's dead, he comes back type of thing. Sometimes you need to pair up with him, sometimes you don't, you know, it's just that kind of like back and forth stuff. So yeah, he is definitely around to stay, and in Rift, I won't spoil too much in Rift, but let's just say he gets an upgrade in Rift. So, because it's time to shed the long Nicholas Grabowski hair that he has and go sleeker and meaner and get some new weapons, get rid of his Python knife and upgrade, you know? And so that's a little tease for Rift.
Well, I'll definitely say this much. As a Titanic historian, you had my utmost attention, without a doubt. And
yeah.
Then you had me at time travel. So.
Yep. And I actually researched the Titanic, too, like every deck level, because Jeremiah's theory is he can't die. So he's just on and everyone on there is, most of them. So.
Yep.
There'll be no witnesses. He can do what he wants. And his son is on there on his honeymoon, so that's why he's on there to track down his son. And he's like, it's all going down anyway. So I'm just, you know, having fun. But I researched every deck and the layout of like, one of the rooms there, like the cigar room type of thing,
mm-hmm.
like they're all playing poker or whatever. And then I did, it was really cool because I'm a big Batman fan. So that scene where he walks in, they're all playing poker and whatnot, it's the whole scene mimics pretty much the Joker scene from Dark Knight when he's walking around the room up top and they're all having that little get-together. Has anyone seen that movie?
Dark Knight? Yeah.
And it's one continuous camera shot and he's going around and he's taking the drinks and drinking them and flipping them and, you know, you remind me of my father and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of patterned that scene in Jeremiah after that one, just kind of this one kind of flowing scene where Jeremiah's just going around the table, you know, because he's looking for his son and he's just kind of causing mayhem. So that was kind of cool to write. So yeah, he'll never go away. Like I said, he's in City of Madness, and there's another one in Rift where he and I, as the author, he comes back and he's like, listen, man, you know, you got the better of me the first time, but now, you know, you're down on your luck. You've gone through all the stuff and, you know, there's no way you can beat me now. And he just, like, beats the crap out of me and puts me through the ringer. And then, you know, I won't tell you how the story ends, but it was, you know, it was very cathartic to write it type of thing. So
that's good, though, you know.
No, it is. And the other cool thing that I'm doing with my stories is because I'm a big advocate for Down syndrome awareness, and I do have a daughter with Down syndrome, me and the family. I've written Down syndrome characters in some of my later stories. So the one that got accepted to the Dire Circle, the Ferryman story, they team up with a Down syndrome teenager with some supernatural abilities to help defeat the War Maiden. So that was cool to write. And there's another story that I'm shopping around called Echoes, which is a throwback to the 1980s horror. Basically, it's like, you know, you have the jock douchebag with his girlfriend, his kid brother, and then the girl, a girl and her teenage brother who has Down syndrome, and she wants to impress the boyfriend, so she drags the brother along because it's her turn to watch the brother for the weekend because the parents are away. So they all go to a cave to explore this cave, but there's the echoes in the cave drive everyone mad to a certain degree, except the Down syndrome teenager because he's listening to his Walkman, so he has earphones in the whole time. So he winds up being the hero at the end. So that's cool. Potty one great too. So. You know,
nice.
So that's a good throwback to like 80s horror, and that's I'm shopping that around. It's with a publisher right now, so they're going to read it next week and let me know. And it's only like 12,000 words, but I built that for a short story. So yeah, so I'm trying to get create new diverse characters in my works as well. So.
So, Jason, what do you find the toughest part about writing, and what's the most rewarding part for you? I wanted to just get your touch base with you on that, see what you thought.
The toughest part about writing and the most rewarding? The most rewarding is every time I have a book published. I know it's cliche because you always think your last book is your best work, but Mr. Tom Brady says, the next ring is the best one because you're always chasing that next one. So whenever I have the new book like City of Madness, it's very rewarding because A, of the work you put into it, and B, the fact that someone still wants to publish your stuff, and C, when the UPS guy delivers it, it's so rewarding to open it up and just see it and feel it and read it and share it with your readers. And that's also very rewarding. I talk to a lot of my reader author friends who want me to beta read their work because they really like my work. And that is so awesome. I'm humbled and I say yes, of course. And that's such a great feeling to, have people think that my work is that good that they want me to help them beta read their work. And that's very rewarding. The toughest, challenging part of it, I would think, would be finding a publisher, deciding what route you want to take, whether it's the self-publishing or try to find a publisher, and promotion and get it out there and be consistent with it. I know a lot of us have, went through a lot of family issues. I was off the map for 5-6 years. He mentioned Shot in the Dark Comics, other authors take time, so that puts a hiccup in everything. But in that kind of time period, I think if you just manage to write, maybe try to get a short story published somewhere, maybe just to keep your name out there. So everyone just, he's still around or she's still around. And then, you have a rebirth or, a comeback, then, that's always a good thing. So challenging would be the promotion and the marketing and, for me, anyway.
Definitely two questions I wanted to ask you, Jason, and we're about out of time, and I don't want us to run out of time because one of them was just talking about writing. Let's say you're at a convention. This person's a huge fan of yours, read all your work. They want to become a writer. You inspired them. What are the downfalls that you would tell a young writer coming into the business wants to write a book? What are the warning signs that you would give him as a writer to become a writer?
Good question.
Oh, yeah. Man. First of all, I tell anybody is is right and don't stop. You know, don't think you can't do it. If you want to do it, write it, and then you can always look at it when you're done. Just write it and get it on paper and look at it and have a beta read and stuff like that, and reach out for mentors and editors, stuff like that, to look it over. You are going to get rejected, most likely. It happens. Don't take it personally. It just meant that you weren't a fit for them. You're a fit for somebody else. Buy the Writer's Market Digest, because that's a great reference tool that I used, and that breaks down authors, agents, everything, and tells you exactly what they're looking for. Because sometimes a lot of new authors send stuff to – they send horror to romance or romance to heat, and it's just not a fit. So be well-versed in that as well. And write a really good query letter when you're ready type of thing, which is a short, brief, hey, this is who I am, this is what my book is about, very briefly, and send it off. And that's an introduction of yourself to the publishing world. And if they like it, then they ask for synopsis and for so much, so forth and so on. But don't take rejection personally, I would say. And keep writing. Don't give up. Even if you stumble, just if that's what you really want to do, keep writing and seek out mentors and beta readers and others that can give you honest feedback on your stuff.
That was a good answer.
Yeah. Yeah, I would add to that, ignore critics, too. Ignore your critics, because you got people that can be critical that are either, you know, unless it's constructive criticism, ignore it. It could be jealousy or envy.
Absolutely. I've had some of them who, you know, I see a lot
of postings on Facebook, and, you know, somebody, like, says something, and one of them is a huge success, a very popular guy around the world. And, you know, he posts up on Facebook, oh, this person said this about me, and he'll post it on Facebook. And, you know, it turns out that it's going to be a little battle war between them. You know, I say forget about them. You know, they're jealous. Uh-huh. You know, they're jealous that you're succeeding. They're sitting on their couch. They got nothing better to do than to write you a nasty email or something nasty about you. Okay. Move on. You know, I took it personal when I first started Francine Friends. I had a guy that was on my ass every day, you know, and, you know, it's just kind of like, okay, let's just start making jokes about this. You know, and I think that's probably the most shameless thing a person can do, because if I hadn't, I think that guy would have driven me nuts.
I'd say maybe take it one step further to say be careful of yes people.
I know that as a fact too. Yes people all the time. Yeah.
I read it. It's wonderful. It's great.
You guys had a wonderful suggestion. Never
you
say
sounded like Tony the Tiger.
I would have said this to Warner Brothers.
That's his favorite cereal. That's why it sounded like Tony the Tiger. Anyway, here's my second question. As you, Jason, and, you know, Tom and William, they want to answer this, and Nick also. We were talking about young, upcoming writers who, let's say you had to sit down one day and you had to write yourself a note you wrote yourself a note as the time that you first started writing. What advice would you give yourself as a young writer starting out?
Stay focused.
I wrote a note
writing
right now.
You're writing a letter right now. You get off the show and you want to write a letter to your younger self. What would you say about writing? What advice would you give about writing?
Don't forget William, too. William's a writer, too.
William, Tom, Nick, all you guys answered.
Let's start with Jason first. Tom second, William, and then me.
All right, that works.
I would say the keep writing, don't listen to your critics, and try to get honest feedback, and you know, if that's really what you want to do, then don't give up doing that type of thing, you know. Just honestly, just simple. Just keep writing. If that's what you like to do, don't let anyone get in your way. Don't let anyone tell you you can't do it, you won't succeed, or, you know, like, big thing for me was I always wanted to be in Barnes & Noble, so that's what I worked for. And then I was in Barnes & Noble. I did multiple signings there. My book was on the shelf, you know, and that started way back when I was a kid, because I've always, you know, always wanted my work published. So that's what I kept driving for.
I echo Jason's sentiments exactly. I'd say keep writing, ignore any critics, and if you want to write, write. You do it for your love of writing, not because you're expecting to get rich out of it. You know, follow your
exactly.
dream.
I'm going to have to echo both Jason and Tom, but also take it one step further. Most of my early times of writing, I've discovered it, you know, throughout my middle school, and you know, obviously my horror stories mixing it with history sent me to the school psychologist. So my advice is going to be, the psychologist doesn't know what they're talking about.
Okay, he got the book. you opened up the Wonka bar, man. You got the Wonka bar.
Wonka bar. I want a Wonka
okay,
bar.
That's the only thing I could come up with. Okay, how are you supposed to go next after that? Nick, what would you say?
Yeah.
You know, with me, back in 1988, when my novel Prey, Serpents, Prey first got published, I got the phone call and everything, and it was the first freaking thing I ever sent out, not even a short story. It was a book. And something I started in high school in math class because I was bored and all that. A month and a half later, the Halloween 4 thing happened and other stuff. So, you know, there's 6 words that I would say to myself back then. Don't give up your day job. Because I thought that, well, I mean, I wasn't insane. I wasn't like too far fetched from it. I'd never been published before. This was before the internet and all that, when it was easier to get published. So this was back in the day. So I did have reason. And I hated my job. I was a security guard overnight, mostly, that year. And so when that happened, I really did think I had it made. But, just the advice that I've given to people later, especially as a publisher, too, is that. Don't give up your day job. And people, when I get submissions, there are people that elaborate in their submissions saying that, well, like this one lady, I don't want to call anybody out, but I'll just give, you know, this one lady, she's been bugging me since January to publish her stuff. She says she's Chinese. She's saying that there's a problem in China. If she gets famous because of this, then she's going to have to go under a pseudonym. And, you know, and stuff. And there's people that approach me like, you know, if you accept me, what will I do with my fame? It's like, what? Fame? What are you talking about? What, What delusions do you have about writers that you don't just make it overnight? Occasionally somebody does. Somebody writes shit on a napkin in a subway and it turns into Harry Potter. But it doesn't happen to most of us.
No.
You know, so that's it. Don't give up your day job. Just wait and see. Just wait and keep on going. Wait and see what happens. And just keep doing it. But don't give up your day job until you start really making money, sign contracts with corporate people and, you know, with that kind of thing. But, you know, I mean, if you submit a book to a publisher, even a New York Times best-selling, like, publisher entity, that's not even guaranteed. That's more of a guarantee than somebody like me who's small press. But still, that only goes so far. You get like a $2,000 advance, and if it doesn't sell, then you get so much money, and then it runs out the next year, and then you're broke again. So even then, you just got to keep pumping it out, and you just but that's the thing. Don't give up your day job unless you're somebody like who's going to be on Francie and Friends pretty soon, Jonathan Mayberry. And I've watched him. I have known him since he came out with his first book, and he just like whew, Marvel Comics and all kinds of stuff. That's another thing. Now, that's all kinds of, you know, things can happen. You just got to keep doing it. You can't just like say, oh, like people have told me too. You wrote Halloween 4, you live in a mansion in Roseville. It's like, no. But anyway, yeah, that's my lecture. I'm off my soapbox.
That was a good one, Nate.
Yeah, that's very good. I mean,
probably
some of the best sound advice ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, before we
Yes.
I said, so I'm not famous? All right.
Well,
we are in our own way. You know, Jason and Tom and even William with your pursuits too, and Jason and Tom, I know better because, you know, our years long relationship. But I see that you get your own people that come back. Like Tom, you said, like at conventions and stuff, people come back year after year expecting you and buy your new thing. And Jason,
that's really flattering.
You know, people come back and over the years, and so, you know, some of us have to. It just has to take longer for shit to happen. But over the course of time, you do get a following, and it grows.
One more really good question. Jason, this is for you. What is the one thing you would give up to become a better writer?
Become a better one of my five jobs.
I thought he was going to say your soul. You would give up your soul, wouldn't you?
No. Maybe a kidney or, you know, Jeremiah gives up an eye. So, probably a job or two so I can actually, you know, focus on the writing and everything else.
But Nick just said don't give up your day job.
I have five of them, so I think I can.
Okay. You can give up at least one of them. All right. Before we get cut off, Jason, do you Google yourself? And if you do, where would we find you?
I Google myself quite frequently.
That sounds funny.
Yeah, I know. Delayed punchline there.
But I'm
doing a long time.
Sounds like a
day
to go.
I know. That's what I was going for. But anyway, you can find me at my own personal website, which is jasongaylert.com.
So it's my name and Jason and GEHLART.com. No www in front of it. I don't do that shit. It's just my name.com.
All right.
And then I'm on Facebook as Jason Wolfgang Gaylor, and I'm on Twitter as Jason Gaylor. I'm on Instagram as well, so I'm all across the social medias. I'm on blackbedsheetbooks.com as well, there with the books with Nick and Tom and everybody.
Jason, spell out the name Gaylor so that people can...
Again? Because it's late at night. Gotcha. Sure. It's GEHLERT. So, jasongaylor.com. And that has all my books on there, most of them, links to Amazon and everywhere. So you can email me from there as well, reach out to me. You can book an event with me if you want, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, you know, that's the easiest way to get a hold of me.
Nice.
Or Facebook, feel free to message me or what have you. If you have any questions or want to order a book or just want to talk shop.
Awesome. That and if any aspiring writers would like to email him or remind you, Jason, when between his five jobs, does run his pages. So reach out to him. He's a great writer, and if you
Thank
want
you.
Advice, he would be the man to give you the advice. For free.
Absolutely. For free. Yes.
Definitely.
All right, here we go. Another closing of a Sunday night. Jason, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Good to talk
and
to you, yeah. Later, everybody.
Yes.
And
William,
Tom,
thanks for...
Go ahead.
Jason said thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, I say thank you to everybody.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Thanks, Jason. Yeah.
Groovy gooey.
Very
and, great, Jason Wolfgang Amadeus Gaylor.
Yes, in the flesh. Or virtually, at least.
It's in the same ballpark.
I don't think I could say Wolfgang without saying it that way. I'm not sure why. Wolfgang! Oh,
know.
Sorry. That was kind of a... That came from out of me.
Well, you just you practice at that. You practice, Nick, okay? And you let us know when you get it right.
I shall.
It shall continue. All right. Tom Sawyer, Nick, thank you very much for giving up your Sunday night, for being here. You're staying up later than me. Except for Nick, you're still awake with me because it's this time of
yeah,
night.
Yeah, I've got things to do. I've got stuff to do. Oh, yeah. By the way, Jason,
yes.
That little thing that I'm looking through, I'm almost done.
Okay.
Cool.
If you know what I mean. Yeah.
Wink.
If I know what you mean.
A little thing that I'm re-looking through, checking for stuff.
Okay.
Okay.
Gotcha. All right. I have no idea what that is, but
good. Good. You shouldn't.
I'll, between me and him.
Hey, Jason,
act surprised later.
Okay.
Jason,
okay.
Jason, you can Google it later.
Okay.
All right. Good night, everybody. Don't forget Wednesday night. Right. Mark Allen, Pilgrim. Oh, it is Bill. It's just
Alan
Pilgrim.
Yes.
I thought it would be different. Okay, Mark Allen will be here. All right. Good night, everybody. And
Pilgrim,
don't forget
Sunday
night.
Pilgrim,
we'll have John Mayberry. And here we go with Willie Mansley with the As the Days of Blues.
woke up this morning looking for my shoes. Look behind the trunk, found the hesitation blues. Lordy, tell me how long.
Lordy, tell me how long.
Will I have to wait?
Will I have to wait?
Can I get you now?
Can I get you now?
Must I hesitate? Blues overtake me, rock away from here. Lordy, tell me how long.
Lordy, tell me how long.
Will I have to wait?
Will I have to wait?
Can I get you now?
Can I get you now?
Must I hesitate?
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.